Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host. Hello. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties, bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on our website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about beliefs and expectations. And of course, we all have beliefs and expectations, not only going in when we first starting a negotiation, a seminar, a workshop, an alternative dispute resolution, whatever it is we're doing, a mediation. Of course, we have them as we go in, but also all along. And we develop different ones, too, as the process progresses. So let's ask what a real base question, and then we will go from there. What types of beliefs and expectations do we encounter within our context, within the context of a mediation, a negotiation, alternative dispute resolution, even a workshop and a seminar? What kind of beliefs and expectations do we encounter? And then we will talk about them and get some practical ideas one by one. This is probably the most basic belief and an expectation too, I suppose. Sometimes they are, something can be both, right? And a lot of people, I can see that this is going to be our number one topic tonight, today, is that the belief that every problem has a solution. Yeah, we're here because we're going to try to find a solution. Every problem has a solution. That's a real basic foundational belief. Every problem has a solution. Yeah. You know, this is also kind of a foundational belief, too, and it could be positive or maybe it has to be discussed. But how about the belief that our own solution is the correct one? We come in with an idea of what needs to be done, and we're pretty sure that that's the correct solution. Yeah, we've got it. We know what to do. So the belief that every problem has a solution, and also the belief that our solution is the best. It's the one that's going to be correct. You know, this is an interesting, I'm going to paraphrase what everyone is saying because we've got a lot of participation. Thank you all for being here. Thank you for your input. Thank you for your ideas. Thank you for listening. How about beliefs in truths? T-R-U-T-H-S, kind of in parenthesis. A belief in truths that we've been taught since childhood because of cultural and religious teachings, right? A belief that what's right in the world, and also that also goes with a belief of what's right versus wrong, which is not always as simple as you think it is, right? Yeah, there's some gray edges around about what is right and what is wrong, right? Yeah, those kind of beliefs also go to a basic truth idea. This is one of my foundational truths. I've been taught it since childhood. I know that this is how the world should be, right? This is how I act in the world. A foundational truth is a big belief and also an expectation that it will be followed, that it will be accommodated, that it will be accepted, right? Yeah, because it's a truth, right? And it's usually a cultural religious teaching that has to do with, well, what you've been taught and how you've seen the adults in your life act all of your life. Right. At what you know is the right way to do something. Yes. A lot of people are talking about an expectation that the participants will act in good faith and make their best efforts. Here we are together. We're all working towards a successful outcome. We may need to define that. We may need to agree on what that looks like. But we're all here in good faith, and we're all going to give our very best to try to get that done. We're going to give our very best. Expectation the participants will act in good faith and make their best effort. I think that's a reasonable expectation, don't you? Yeah, that we're all here really to work this out. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, I'm going to go with that. Now that we've talked about that, quite a few people are saying there's also an expectation that there will be a successful outcome, that we're going to succeed. Yeah, that we're going to have a successful outcome and be able to go forward with it in the real world. Because quite frankly, if it's just theory, I guess I'm not a theoretical scientist or something, but if it's just theory, that's nice, but not quite it. You understand what I mean? It needs to have a real practical outcome so that we can go forward and find a successful solution. We can really take a step, even if it's not the final one, because we've discussed in prior shows, archived, recipeforpeacenow.com. Even if it's not the final solution, the whole thing, it's a step forward. And we're going to take it in the real world and then work from there, right? Right. So we have an expectation of a successful, I'm going to add really useful, pragmatic outcome that we could really put into effect. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a good point. There's a belief that the process will fulfill expectations. It's really a belief that we're in the right place, right? That the process is going to fulfill our expectations, which is really an expectation of a successful outcome. Yeah. And we're going to define it and work towards it, and the process itself will assist us in fulfilling that, in getting to the successful outcome, in fulfilling our expectations. Right, yeah. Okay, now let's take these one by one. Some of them maybe will collapse into each other. We'll see how much time we have. But we need to know about beliefs and expectations of our participants and of ourselves too, right? Because we have beliefs and expectations and also of our I guess we could call them our superior, somebody that we are reporting back to who has usually hired us, right, to get the job done and reach a successful outcome. Yes, our beliefs and expectations of us and as well as the participants that we can find a solution to whatever the problem is. Every problem has a solution. Mm-hmm. You know, I just love this. Muhammad, this is really the crux of it. And it sounds like, well, you need to go with a problem, but no. Muhammad says that you may need to rephrase the problem so that it fits the solution. That is the ultimate practical. You may need to rephrase the problem so that it fits the solution. We've got something that needs to be done. We can see that something needs to change, right? For example, we have a solution in mind, and the problem is to get to that solution. Well, let's sit down and think about this. Maybe we need to look at the problem in a different way so that it fits the solution, so that we can make the what's going on come together, be more practical, really be able to think about it as a cohesive whole. Sometimes we phrase the problem in such a negative kind of hopeless way that we lose track of the fact that there is a solution. And that maybe this problem is to be broken up into several areas. And we've got a solution for the first one. Hey, we're a third of the way there, right? Yeah. And then we can work on that successful outcome and work our way towards the second one and towards the final one. And be pretty soon, wow, you've reached consensus. You've negotiated a practical, doable solution because you took the problem step by step, right? Yeah. Sometimes the problem needs to be phrased in more than one sentence, more than one way, right? It needs to be thought of like that, thought of as a sequence, thought of as steps, thought of as something that's doable. This one we can do now. We'll worry about the second one after we finish this one. Ah, we're done. Let's get to the second stage. Yeah, fabulous. You may need to rephrase the problem so that it fits the solution. Your first success is also very important morale-wise, right? Yes, very important to be able to say, look, we've gotten this far successfully. Let's go forward. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, Liz and others are talking about when you've got a problem to see it, look at and fit it into existing and prior solutions. You might have gotten solutions before that are really applicable and give you at least a starting point. Because what you're doing now may be more sophisticated. There may be more angles to it. But the process that you successfully completed is still good. The process is still good. But you need to look at and fit into existing prior solutions. Boy, that sure looks like that. Let's try this one. Let's fit this in so that we have confidence going forward. And lots of help. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, this is true, too, that sometimes we have a level with some more complicated issues, but they're all really, really interconnected, right? Yeah. Sometimes there's more complicated ones and less complicated ones. Let's solve the easier ones first. Give us some teamwork practice. Give us a success to work on. Yeah. It's good for team building. It's good for consensus building to have success, to start with the more readily solved problems first, right? Yeah. It's good for funding. You might need to ask for a grant to show how far you've come. Yeah, I'm not in favor of the let's tackle everything all at once, throw it on the platter and see which ones fall off. No, I like to see which ones we can handle in sequence so that we have a handle on it, so that we can really go forward. Yes, it gives confidence. Mm-hmm. This is a true too. Elias and Harley and others are talking about the fact that you may have to reach consensus to modify the question towards the solution. Yeah, you don't do it unilaterally as a leader, usually at least. You need to have some consensus to say, you know, this is what we're faced with. Let's handle this part now. Mm-hmm. And let's go forward. Let's get this done. Right? Yeah. And then you work your way forward. Mm-hmm. Yes. Now let's go to the next one, which is actually connected, kind of. Because we thought that our first area for expectation of belief was the belief that every problem could be solved. And now we're heading into the belief that our own ideas are the best, and they're the correct ones, and they're the right ones, and that everybody should just follow them because it's right. It's true. Uh-huh. Yeah. Let's connect this, that our own solution is correct, with our belief in our cultural and religious truths. Because usually speaking, that's why we think it's correct, right? That's kind of melding two topics together, but we want to have lots of time to think about this. And that our own solution is correct, and oftentimes we think that because we're fairly certain that what we've got going here is the truth. Yeah, and we know this because it's the moral background, the moral fiber on which we have, well, we've had a lot of practice. We've had a lot of people thinking about it. Yeah, the truth, right? Let's think about this for a second. It is something that we know instinctively is true. Let's think about that. How do we know it? Because of a cultural, a religious, a teaching, something from our even our childhood that makes up the very moral essence of who we are. So that we can define right versus wrong for ourselves, right? Yeah. Let's think about that for a second. Is our definition of truth the same as every participant and the leader? Maybe not. Sometimes you've got a group that is very similar. They have similar backgrounds. And sometimes they do inherently understand what they think are the truths, and they don't even have to be spoken. Everybody knows them. Sometimes not. What are we going to do? Rihama and others are talking about practicing listening and practicing the civility rules, right? Because that goes with practicing listening. We're faced with a whole bunch of different kinds of people in the group, all fairly certain that they are correct with their solution. All kind of indignant that everybody else can't see that their solution is the best and everything should just be collapsed into it, right? Yeah. So there we have it. We're going to need to practice listening, right? We have to listen. And the civility rules. Thank you, Rahama and others, about talking about the civility rules. They permeate everything, of course. And for those of you who are new, welcome. And you know, we talk about the civility rules a lot. They are the only rules the Recipe for Peace Now has. And basically speaking, the civility rules say you will not be rude to each other. You will not be rude to each other. Yeah, the civility rules. You're going to be civil. Ha, what a concept. So, we're going to take turns speaking. We're going to practice the art of listening. Listening with empathy, which is not agreement. It is understanding, right? Empathy is not agreement. It is understanding. Understanding where that comes from. Yes. You know what, Stephen and quite a few others are talking about understanding of difficult opinions and solutions and that you need to go with the idea that everybody is going to listen and we're going to break out the 5W questions, right? The understanding of different opinions, understanding of different solutions. We need to make consensus. Let's break out the 5W questions in addition to our civility rules. What are the 5W questions you ask if you haven't been here before? Yes, most of you have been here before. Thank you all for being here. 5W questions are who, what, where, when, and why. Who, what, where, when, why. The reason to break out the 5W questions when you've got an unusual or maybe a usual but a very strong belief and expectation that is not in tune with everyone else especially. The 5W questions give us the answers to really why, so that we can have empathy, which is understanding, not agreement. Don't have to agree, but you have to be civil and understand each other and reach consensus. Yes, I always get this question. It's a really good one. People want to know if you ask the 5W questions kind of one after another in front of everybody. Who, what, where, when, and why? The answer is it depends. I know I say it depends quite a bit, but it does. It depends on the type of group it is. It depends if that will be an embarrassment to the person needing to ask, because we don't want anyone to have a non-convivial bad time. It depends on whether or not it's appropriate, right? Yeah. And also, you don't ask all, you pick and choose your 5W questions according to the circumstances, right? Yes. You don't just keep going why at somebody, let them explain. Yes. You need to have civility overlying everything, even the 5W questions. Because sometimes it might be a personal reason, but we need to know. We need to know why. Why this person looks like they're being kind of not as forthcoming as they could be, right? Yeah, why? Well, they've got a, kind of an agenda that we don't all know. Mm-hmm. Yes. You know, this is a good point that Hussein and others are making. Hussein says that you cannot alter cultural and religious solutions. You can't alter them. They're ingrained. They're childhood truths, right? And we've all got different ones. Mm-hmm. So what should we do? It's not our job to change someone's life and to make them a better person and a more tolerant person for life. No. We want them to do it now because they're impeding progress, and it's not a good idea. But we need to find something that we can do to create a solution that works. And the solution is to make an exception. Mm-hmm. We've got some cultural and religious differences that haven't been surmounted in many, many years. And we can't solve them in our mediations and like that. It's unreasonable. What we need to do is explain to our participants that there's an exception in place for this group at this time with these issues. We will accept each other on face value. Mm-hmm. We will work together. We will be courteous. We will work together as a team. Now, when you get out into the real world, nobody's watching. You can say something rude. But when we're with this team, this group, we are all going to work together on these issues. Nothing to do with the outside world. Well, kind of it does. But you make tell them it's safe. This is a safe zone where it's okay to deal with people that you're... Well, your family, your religion, your culture tells you are not good people to deal with. These people are. Just different, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, for this particular group at this particular time. Hussein is adding that sometimes it is very, very ingrained and you should forego any ceremonial type stuff. Does that make sense? That you need to just go straight to the facts and forego any kind of distractions that happen. Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay. Now, our next topic is going to be an expectation of good faith. An expectation of good faith. I think we can all go in with that. We have the expectation that the other participants and the leader, yes, the leader and whoever sent the leader, right? Because sometimes it's corporate and we're brought in on some sort of an issue that's occurring, right? That we've all acting in good faith to the very best of our abilities. Acting in good faith. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You know, this is a good point that Tony and others are making. You act to the best of your abilities. And if whatever it is really beyond the abilities of the team, of the group, we really don't know which way to do it. It's beyond our abilities. Yeah? If that's true, then we need to call in an expert, right? We need to find someone with a good reputation who will be called in and give their opinion on it, right? Now, that doesn't always happen. But sometimes you are acting in good faith. It's just that you don't know. Yeah. Just call in an expert. Give their opinion. Mm-hmm. Yes. Remember that an expert does not have to be a professional expert. An expert is someone who has done it before. Sometimes the best experts are the ones who have failed before, because they tell you how come they didn't make it, but they're still interested in seeing that somebody does. Yes. So sometimes they're the most interesting is the people who tell you what didn't work, so that you don't make the same mistake twice. Mm-hmm. An expectation of good faith. William and others are talking about an atmosphere of trust so that you can admit that you don't know. That's a very good point. You create an atmosphere of trust so you can admit it if you've done it wrong. My goodness, what an idea. Mm-hmm. An atmosphere of trust. Mm-hmm. Also admit it not only if you've done it wrong, but if you don't know, right? Mm-hmm. Nobody's going to blame anybody. We're just going to go forward and find the solution together. An expectation of good faith. Zinnia and others are talking about organizational spies. Yes. They've been sent in maybe even to derail the conversation, but they sure haven't been sent by all those global people around the world who go, oh, my goodness, I don't think so. Mm-mm. We're going to have, if you've got someone who's an organizational spy and they are not acting in good faith, we're going to try the 5 questions on them, right? Who, what, where, when, and why? We want to know why they're there and if they've come to derail us, right? Were they sent by the opposition? Mm-hmm. Actually, if you can kind of turn somebody who was sent by the opposition, you can kind of get them to go for the other side, go for you. They are the best and the most informed expert because they came from the other side and they can tell you stuff like expectations and beliefs that the opposition has. So it's always very interesting, and it's very important to know if that's what you're looking at. Yeah, somebody who's kind of not in good faith. Mm-hmm. You know, this is a good point that Alex and others are talking about. Sometimes people are not conscious about the fact that they're not acting in good faith. Do you ever have that? Yeah, they don't realize it. They think that they're doing a good job, but they're not putting all their effort in because really they kind of don't understand what they're supposed to do. These are the people that you need to take aside, right, during one of our frequent breaks, because they're good for getting to know each other and for networking and for having the leader take you aside and get them kind of on track. They don't realize that they're not acting to the best of their abilities because they don't understand which ability needs to be utilized. And that's the leader's job, to notice that and to take them aside and kind of set them on the right path, set them on the go path. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you've got it where somebody is not holding up their end on a team, right? And the other team members kind of come to you. Mm-hmm. Now, is that bad faith? Well, it might be laziness. They might not be a spy, but they might not be very efficient, for example. Have to take them aside and see what's what and who's who. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another expectation that we have is an expectation of success, right? An expectation of success. And that goes kind of hand in hand with a belief in the process, which was our next one after this. Yeah, an expectation of success and a belief in the process. Really believe that we are getting somewhere, that we're going to reach success. It's just going to maybe it'll take us longer than we thought. I always, if somebody asks me how long it's going to take, which they think is a reasonable question, but really kind of isn't, right? Because how do I know how long it's going to take? It depends on the participants, not my leadership skills, of course, which are excellent. I'll take a sip of water. Excuse me. Oh, excuse me. But you might need to make the process in stages, for example. But we have confidence. We have confidence in the leader, right? Fitz, Sidney, and others are talking about faith in the leader, which is usually us. And our participants have faith that we know what on earth we're doing. We've done it before. This is why I am so fond of transparency. I come right out and I tell my group how it's going and what we're doing next, and maybe even why, right? These are all very important things to know, questions that we need to answer. Yes. And that's the leader's job, to be transparent and to really get things organized. Now, if it's something big and it's very complicated, you may not be the person that does the organizing, but you're the person that supervises the organizer, right? They come to you when they've got problems or questions because you're open to being asked questions, right? And they come to you when somebody's perhaps not pulling their weight, right? Yeah, that's interesting to know. We have to have a little talk about that. Because sometimes people think they can hide in the not pulling the weight category. Yeah, no one will know. It's getting done, see? But a lot of times groups are like that. There's one person that's particularly efficient, and sometimes they're doing the whole thing, and other people would like a chance too. You see, it's not only the lazy, it's the hyper good sometimes are in need of some assistance, right? Mm-hmm. Because we want the process to always move forward. Mm-hmm. You have an expectation of success and a belief in the process. And the success comes from that belief that the process is sound and we're going forward. Mm-hmm. Yes, people are talking about faith in the leader and also faith in your team. Mm-hmm. This is an interesting way of putting it. Hasrat, yes, says that participants and leader honor the process that leads to consensus and success. Participants and leader are the process that leads to consensus and success. Well, I suppose that's true, because your people are what makes the process go forward. Their diligence, their enthusiasm, because you have to keep enthusiasm up, right? Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, this is true. We've talked about this on prior shows. I am not big on making mission statements and timelines and stuff just because somebody told you that in week two we're supposed to do that and start it. I like it if it's going to have a practical use. And it is true that people forget how far down they were. They forget how far we've come because we're still in the process and the successful solution seems like it's going to take a lot more time. Well, yeah, it may take a lot more time, but not probably as much as the first week or two where we all settled in, yeah? The process sometimes needs a timeline so that the participants can remember where we started. Yeah, a timeline and a stated goal so we know where we're headed. Because if you don't have a stated goal, you don't know where it is that you are headed to get to your successful solution, right? Yeah. So sometimes that's useful, a timeline. And yes, we talk about this lots, really. Recipe for Peace now kind of advocates celebrating each successful step so that we know we've taken another one. Yeah, so that we know that we're going forward. Yes. And, you know, sometimes you have issues that are really big, and you have to celebrate each and every success in and of itself because it's getting towards the whole. And the whole is going to take a lot of effort and a lot of teamwork, right? Yeah. But the individual steps are doable, and if we make enough of them, we have going to reach our successful outcome. Yes, people asking for an example. You guys know that I am a Rotarian, and Rotary is a service organization that puts service above self, and we have nearly eradicated polio from the face of the earth. This is a biggie. It was, oh my God, even to say that, think about that. Our goal, our successful outcome, is to eradicate polio from the planet. It's been here since the dinosaurs. It's really a scourge in countries that don't have real good access to vaccines and things. But there's a vaccine. We're going to eradicate polio from the face of the earth. That was a lot of steps, right? A lot of partners along the way. Don't forget to shun, not to shun other people, right? A lot of partners along the way, yeah? And a lot of different moving pieces that need to be kept track of, right? Vaccines were invented. The little drop on the tongue type thing with the canister that shows you if it's still good. I mean, businesses got into this because it got funded. Yes, it got publicity. It's in its final legs. Look at all the success and failure that we had along the way. Success is to be celebrated, literally, and failure is to be learned from. Yeah. Which is the best learning, I got to tell you. So we need to have an expectation of success and a belief in the process and a belief in ourselves that we can do it. Mm-hmm. Yes. You know, it is a good point. Participants and leader are the process that leads to consensus and success. Mm-hmm. I'm very big on, I think, a convivial atmosphere too. Right? Yeah. Comfortable, easy to get to. In the United States, easy parking is not such a, it's kind of a draw because people, it's hard to park. Mm-hmm. Tell everybody how we're doing. Celebrate each success, no matter how kind of smallish it is, because it's fun to go out and celebrate. And like that. Yeah. So, how are we going to get to know each other so that we can create this convivial atmosphere? We're going to have some food in the room. We are. Mm-hmm. And as you all are reminding me already, because I forget, we're going to, if we're going to have food in the room, and we would like to because the food is a tool. The food, you might be hungry, it might be dinner time, but it's really a tool to keep us all talking, to keep us all together in the room, and to have us do something that is fun, interesting, and is not directly in conflict with anybody else. Everybody likes to eat. So if we're going to have food as a tool in the room, we're going to use it on our timeouts and our breaks, right? It's going to be something nice to eat. Maybe something nice to drink, too, if everybody's okay with that. If not, there's sodas and all, and then coffee and things. Mm-hmm. So before we can bring any food, we're going to take a survey. The leader's going to take a survey, the leader's assistant, and ask if anybody has an allergy, a religious prohibition, or just doesn't eat some kind of food. We want everybody to have a good time. When we bring the food, we're going to bring a list with it as to what is in it. Not what's it called, meatloaf, what's in it. So I can run my eye down the list and see if I can eat that which is being presented. Mm-hmm. I also think that we should have a safe recipe, which is one with not too many ingredients, and the ingredients would be familiar to my participants. And, of course, mine are different than yours. Where I am, a curry would be unusual, and probably an adventure recipe. Where you are, curry might be eaten constantly, and it's very, very ordinary. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So let's get on with it. I know. Sometimes I don't get to the recipes because we have such fabulous conversations, so I kind of made a little extra time to get to it because I know a lot of you like it. So let's do the safe recipe first. And the safe recipe is a beef goulash. Mm-hmm. Now, as I was prepping for the show, and I was looking at the recipe, because the show is organic, and it's not scripted, it goes wherever it is that the conversation takes us. As I was looking at this beef goulash recipe, I was thinking, you know, it's kind of close to an adventure recipe, pardon me, because it has a spice, I think it is, paprika, which is kind of unusual in this around here. So it might be an adventure recipe. You'll have to judge your people. Because it has paprika. And yes, before people are asking already about the sour cream. Because everybody curdles the darn thing. I certainly do. I am not putting sour cream into the goulash. I serve it on the sides. You can have as much or as little as you would like. And also it avoids the kind of cream curdly type look to it. Tastes good, but it looks bad. So, let's get to the beef goulash. Let's have 1/4 cup of oil, 3 pounds, maybe a little more, you can decide how you think about it, of boneless, like a chuck meat. Around here, they call it stew meat. And it's already pre-chunked, in all truth and honesty. And it's quite inexpensive. So, about 3 pounds. A little bit more is okay, too. Let's have 1 tablespoon of just regular flour, 1 tablespoon of paprika. Quite a bit of paprika in this because it makes it a goulash. If you think that's unusual, make this your adventure recipe. Let's have 2.5 cups of beef stock, 4 tablespoons of butter, 4 onions. I'm going to use the kind of sweet kind called Vidalia around here. 4 onions. I'm going to chop them up. Let's have about 4 carrots also. Dice them, right? Let's have 1 teaspoon of dried thyme, a couple of bay leaves, which we'll try to remember to take out, a giant can of diced tomatoes with juice and everything, like a 28-ounce can. You can't do that, get 2 medium cans, but juice and all. If you're kind of off on your measurement on the tomatoes, use a little less of the beef stock because you're adding a little bit more liquid. You have to judge the liquid. Let's have 2 tablespoons of tomato paste just to add to it, right? 3, maybe 4 potatoes that we're going to dice up. The like a russet potato. I like the little red ones, those little round red ones. They cook really nice, and you can cheat and kind of cut them into small pieces without actually taking the skin off, which appeals to me. Cut them like into 4 little wedges. And we're going to have sour cream on the side. We're not putting it in. Because people either love the paprika or they want to make it a little less strong. Yeah, so don't put stuff in that you can put on the side. We're going to take our oil, put in a big, nice big skillet. We're going to add the beef in batches. Cook it over medium heat, right? Stirring, turning, till it browned all over, right? Reduce the heat and sprinkle it with flour just to give it a little bit of oomph, right? Give it a nice stir. Now we're going to kind of gradually pour in the beef stock so it doesn't splash you is what it really is. Bring the whole thing to the boil, stirring continuously. Just stir, 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 stir. Let's take this whole thing out and stick it into something we can put in the oven, like a Dutch oven. You know that skillet we just used? Let's fill the butter in, add the onions and the carrots, cook them around 5 minutes. The bay leaves, the diced tomatoes, and the tomato paste, still on high, still cooking on the stove. 5 minutes, right? Now we're going to add the potatoes, which we've made into small pieces so that they cook real nice, right? And we're going to bring it to a boil. Give it a couple of minutes on boil. You know, that casserole dish where our meat is and our, really, really mostly our meat is in there in the stock, casserole dish with the meat in the stock. Let's throw everything into that from the skillet, right? We're not going to transfer it into the oven because it's now in a casserole dish, a 325, not very hot, 325 preheated oven. Mm-hmm. This might be the time for me to take out the bay leaves. Because I forget them. You can take them out whenever you darn please. Mm-hmm. And we're going to take everything, throw it into the casserole dish. Give it a nice cover. And cook it about 2 hours until the meat is nice and tender. It'll take you about 2 hours for the meat to be tender. Yeah. So, that is our safe recipe. Delicious. It is very popular. You can use a little less paprika if you think that that's going to be a problem and keep it on the side to sprinkle. Yes. Sour cream on the side, yes, and maybe some rice even. People really like rice on everything. I like rice on everything, come to think of it. It is our safe recipe because it is, except for the paprika, most people that would be in my group would be able to eat it. Mm-hmm. Pop it out of the oven. If you have an oven on the premises, nice to finish it off there because it smells fabulous. But the key to it is that you want the vegetables to be sufficiently cooked so that they're nice and tender but not squished, and you want the meat to be cooked straight through. And yes, people are already asking about variations. Remember, if you make variations and you add wine and pork and stuff like that, it's now an adventure recipe. You have to take the survey and find out if everybody can eat that. Right? Right. Okay. I have left enough time to make our adventure recipe also. Yay, team. It is an Italian sausage penne bake. Adventure? Yeah, it's the sausage part. Because it is pork, and a lot of people do not eat pork. You know what? I'm getting a lot of votes for the goulash to add caraway seeds to it. You know why I don't? A lot of people don't care for them. Put them on the side. They are perfectly nice, yes. And then if somebody would like to sprinkle caraway seeds and sour cream and people are voting for chutney and stuff like that, put it on the side. And then you won't have to... People will not eat the goulash because it's got too much spice or something for them. And if they want lots, hey, that's what spoons are for. Of the condiments. Yeah, put the condiments on the side. Okay, I think we've got enough time for our adventure recipe. It's a sausage penne bake. So we're going to have, about 2 cups of penne. We're going to cook it al dente. We're going to drain it. We're going to set it aside, right? Let's have a green pepper and a red pepper. Core seed cut into nice little thin strips, right? Or you can make it kind of rough dice if you prefer the looks of it. It's a looks thing. It's not so much a taste thing. So we got a green onion. I keep saying onion. A green pepper and a red pepper. Let's have 6 ounces of sausage. If you'd like more, go for more. I'm going to crumble it up, and we're going to give it a little cook. Mm-hmm. You could also use pepperoni. Make slices of pepperoni in it. Just cut them into like little strips, just straight down, cut through. Very delicious. People really like it. It's a little different, right? Let's get to the onion. Let's have a nice onion, nice sweet onion, thinly sliced. Mm-hmm. Some garlic. I like 3 cloves. Mince it up. I like a lot of garlic and things. You think I use too much, use less. Mm-hmm. Let's have a couple teaspoons of oil. 1.5 cups of marinara sauce. Now, if you're a better person than I am, you could make your marinara sauce, your pasta sauce, just a red pasta sauce, just what they call traditional around here. In all truth and honesty, it comes in a jar. It's easy to come by. It's cheap. And I personally will not stand around making marinara sauce when I'm making a penne bake. So I'm going to use a jar. If you're going to use fresh, yours will be more delicious than mine. Mm-hmm. And let's have about 2/3 of a cup of shredded Italian cheese, like a mozzarella. There's such a thing as an Italian cheese blend that comes shredded, right? Yeah, some sort of shredded cheese. If you need to shred it yourself, I think mozzarella and maybe even some provolone to make it a little softer. I like a white cheese, though, to be on top. It looks better. We're going to preheat our oven to 350. We're going to get ourselves a nice square baking dish because it looks nice in that, but you can use a round one. You can any kind of a big dish that you'd like. We've cooked our pasta, right? We've drained it. We've set it aside. We're now going to take our skillet, and we're going to put some oil in it. We're going to cook the peppers, the sausage, or pepperoni, the onion, and the garlic. It doesn't take very much time. If you're using sausage, you don't even need the oil because sausage has fat that comes off, right? Pepperoni, you might need a little bit of oil depending on what you've got. It takes 3 minutes. Yeah. You can always add oil. Basically speaking, the sausage will make it for you, which is really kind of good, right? Yeah. 3-5 minutes, right? We've got that lovely jar of marinara pasta sauce. Stick it in the vegetable mixer. Mix. Toss everything around. Yeah. Get our pasta. Toss that in there. Everything's now mixed and all incorporated, right? Take the whole thing. We're not going to call it the pasta mixture because the pasta's in there. We're going to stick it in our baking dish. Nice and even. We're going to bake it for about half an hour because we want it to be all heated through and incorporated, but really everything is already cooked, right? We're not attempting to cook stuff. So it doesn't take very long, which means that this is a dish you could prep, take with you if there was facility to cook, to use an oven, wherever it is that you're meeting. Smells fabulous. And it doesn't take very long. Maybe half an hour, not longer. We're going to do it for about 25 minutes. It's nice and hot. Remember that cheese we have, the 2/3 of a cup? At the very last minute, we're going to coat the top with the cheese. Sprinkle it all over the top. And we've taken the cover off of the pasta, right? Yeah. We sprinkle all over the top. We don't put the cover back on. And we're going to bake it another 5 minutes until all the pasta makes all the cheese makes a lovely covered top. Yum! Yes. So, there you have it. A sausage penne pasta bake. Delicious. Coated in cheese. Hey, everybody likes it. It is an adventure recipe because of the sausage. As you can plainly see, if you added like chicken or you just didn't add the sausage, you made it vegetarian, it would be a safe recipe. It goes both directions. The sausage adds a little kick to it, but it's delicious as a vegetarian too. You add more vegetables. You add like carrots and maybe some zucchini and like that. And it's yummy too. Yeah. So whatever you go to do with it, it's flexible. But you have to have taken the survey and know what people can eat. Yes. My friends, we are almost out of time. Thank you so much for all of your participation. Thank you for being here. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. If you would like to contact us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. Our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. If you would like to hear prior shows, they are archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.